Good morning. I'm so excited to check in with you all and see how everyone is doing. Good morning. Lauren just joined us, Ava and Nancy. And I would like to read to you something from this book, The Code of Authentic Living, Cellular Wisdom. Unfortunately, we can't get any more books. We bought Joan King Crossed the Rainbow Bridge. Now it's been a couple of years ago. And we were in touch with her husband and bought all the books that she had printed left over. So unfortunately, sometimes you find them unused. And sometimes they're a really reasonable price. And when I first looked, because our people were really looking for them, the price at one time was like $700. And then at another time, someone found it at a reasonable price. We paid $28 to get them, you know, the rest of them. So I just want to honor this woman because she brought one of the keys that I had been searching for all these years, this concept of the merging of science and spirituality that changed her life and took her away from being a research scientist at the top of her game at Tufts University to running into the legend, this Hindu legend that I believe you've all heard enough times that I don't have to repeat it again. Lauren, you found one. You were really a lucky one. But the thing is that some of the statements that I have pulled out here that I just think are so important to understanding the fact that we are divine beings. And at this time on the planet, that's the message that gives us hope, realizing that we don't have just one time around. Because if we thought this is all there was, whoa, wouldn't be such a good picture. I don't believe. And the fact that the huge, huge, huge majority of people understand that about reincarnation and the fact that we live more than one life. And if you don't, if that isn't a part of your understanding and belief system, the little book that I keep recommending to people who don't have a deeper spiritual understanding is that wonderful novel by Jane Roberts, because most of her books were channeling Seth, but her novel, The Education of Oversoul 7, where she writes this intriguing novel about sitting on a cloud as Oversoul 7, watching himself first in the woman in the Stone Age, and then as a starving artist man in the Middle Ages, and then as a my age in the present time, and then in the future. And I'm saying that because there are some people who just have not yet come to the understanding that we live many, many lives. And this karma that we live, that I believe that every thought we have, every feeling, every emotion, every belief, this quote from Greg Braden, that's energy, that the energy that we put out in this lifetime is most likely very much influenced by what's happened to us in the past. And that this concept of Ho'oponopono, this Hawaiian prayer of forgiveness, is one of the most important concepts that we can bring into our lives, because forgiving ourselves is, I think, the hardest to do and the most important. So I just want to, or I should, I know, very important, whatever is most important, I don't know. So I want to read some of the outlines because, this book you don't get on Kindle, so I have to write everything in the book. And on page 14, what I keep reading over and over, and it really has affected me, is when we open ourselves to source energy, that divine spark within us, we connect with cellular wisdom. For source energy, that divine spark in every cell in our body is our link to the creative energies of the universe. And that this 1 1/4 circle spiral is, when we do the T-touch, is like a key to connect in to that divine spark, that creative energy in every cell in our body. I mean, it's just amazing for me. And this connecting with, I'm just reading some more of this, with this divine consciousness by, it is necessary for our mental, physical, and emotional health. And this, I had another quote that I wanted to read to you. Where did I put it? This is interesting. I had a whole thing. Well, I guess actually what I get, maybe it's in this book. Let's just see. And then if not, it's not mint. Nope. I wrote quite a bit. And what that says to me is, this is our opportunity. I would just like to open this conversation. If any of you have anything to add to that, something that you have found that is important for you to share with us, this concept that every cell in our body is a genius. That's the first sentence in that first chapter in that book. And that when we recognize that, this idea of celebrating this body that we have, that's a concept that many, many of us have gone through stages of in our lives when that was simply not possible because we didn't like ourselves or we didn't like parts of ourselves. Sorry, I'm just turning off my phone. And when you think that, when we think that, what I like to do is just hold up this mirror to see that every cell in your body now has that divine spark, as a motor, so to speak, rough word, but you know what I mean, in the center of the cell. And so when we can go beyond our selves, our ego self, and see our beauty, we're making a difference on the planet. Because when we recognize that we're all connected, we're all one, then every thought that we have and every belief we have, and every time we're able to turn around and forgive ourselves for whatever, we make a difference for every person on the planet. That's the thing that I love about understanding the wider, the bigger picture. Good morning, Ms. Megan. And Marnie, good morning. So I would like to know if any of you have anything you would like to just share with the group, because this community of people caring for ourselves and each other is such a precious opportunity to ask questions or make comments. Anybody like to share?
Oh, hi Linda, it's Chanel in Kelowna.
Chanel, hi.
Hi, I just wanted to share quickly here with everyone that what I've come to understand through the COVID time here and our connection with that spark in our emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual selves, that the connection with my animals is really powerful in order to engage that spark. And without my little being with me, I'm not sure, I was coping very well, but my kids were upset and we hadn't, we, you know, passed our dog on to someone who had a bigger, larger space for him because he was too big for us. And I'd lost my other cats. And so I went out and brought a cat home, a kitten. And immediately, now this cat is very amazing. He copies everything I do. If I go to the bathroom, he's there with me. If I'm in the bathtub, he's trying to get into the bath. It's so funny. He's so brave. He wants to go on dives with us. And my daughter, I've never seen this. My daughter packs him around like in her arms upside down with his belly up. And he has just been a life spark in my life to help me through all of this terrible emotional mess that, like, you know, I feel like, oh, my boyfriend thought I was crazy because I went and packed everything important to myself. I was so sure that my house was going to catch fire for some reason. I didn't even know they were evacuating areas around here. I went and put everything into storage, even my books, Code of Authentic Being, and all of my books that I need to read to help me to feel grounded. And I put everything into storage. He said, don't worry, nothing's gonna happen. But it's true, nothing happened. But it's just, you know, how to like, yes, do T-touch. And connecting with Shadow, our new kitten, has been just keystone to our survival lately. So I wanted to share that with you. And also with my horse Pepper, because he's been far away from me now for a couple of years, healing his feet on a mountain. And I went and saw him this summer, and he had tears in his eyes. And I thought he was happy on the mountain. And now I'm trying to figure out how to get him closer to me, because I can see that he likes the connection with people. And whether that's a spiritual thing, like, he likes his connection with horses, but he also really likes his connection with people. And to me, that was new, a new feeling, like a brand new feeling, like, oh, I'm not just here for him. He's also here for me. And I need to acknowledge that.
That's beautiful. And Chanel, the fact that you packed everything up and people were evacuating in your area, I mean, this is what I see as trust in God and tie your camel.
Wow.
And you are undoubtedly picking up on what's going on all around you, because
yes, I'm definitely psychic. I've you really freaked some people out with that ability sometimes, but yeah, I'm definitely a little bit psychic.
Yeah. What I'd like to say with your horse, are you consciously, like, maybe have a picture with him and stay in touch with him? I mean, you can just check in with this picture just to remind you, but know that he's with you all the time and let him know that you know that. Speak to him. I know that you, of course, can do that, but sometimes we forget. And drawing that kitten, that shadow into your life at this time, oh my gosh, how many people have been saved by their animals. It's just incredible. So thank you for sharing it. I really appreciate
that.
I don't think you were living in Vernon when right around you things are burning up. Not a bad idea to pack up and be prepared. Certainly,
yeah.
My brother's doing the same thing. Everybody
just
I know
in case.
Doing the same thing in that area. Thank you.
Linda Leslie has her hand raised too.
Thank you, Kirsten Henry. Leslie.
Yeah, it was just kind of in response to your question around every cell and its divine spark. That concept has been I've kind of had to learn it, I guess. It's been part of this journey, my T-Touch journey, and kind of expanded. But what it's done for me is it's been like a bit of a guide. It's reminded me to step into the lighter side. And like when it's all a bit emotional and a bit heavy, just say, okay, it's just another release of clearing out those cells, clearing out all of the junk in each cell. So to be reminded of that constantly has been incredibly valuable to bring me back, I suppose, to myself. I guess that's the thing. But yeah, it's I suppose the concept, it's just I've had to learn and embrace the process of it. But I've also realized it's part of what I suppose I innately was connected to, but didn't know. If that makes any sense. I don't know why that makes any sense, but.
That's okay. I mean, being connected, I believe we're all connected, but not knowing it, when we awaken to that fact and realize that connection.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. So I didn't know. I was, yeah. I lived it, but I didn't know. So when I started, when I kind of, I suppose T-Touch was kind of the thing that caught me. So through this awakening, I guess. And all of a sudden I'm saying, but I've always lived like that. I've always done that. But why do I have to now work at it? And it was just because the lid had been taken off and I saw all the dark stuff. But being reminded and learning about being connected, that actually it is okay. And there is that was kind of how I'd lived, but unknowingly. So yeah, very interesting journey.
Do you want to talk about the dark stuff? Because
I don't even know. Yes, not yeah. So
I don't mean
basically my horse died. No. Yeah.
But the fact.
No, yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. Basically, my horse died, and I did not know how to operate. I did not know that I needed a horse. I've now learned how humans live without animals. Or without a horse. I didn't know how people lived without horses, without people, like without animals. Didn't make any sense to me. What I did not know was how to feel love, how to feel gratitude, and how to feel appreciation without the automatic process of turning up to see my horse and for him to greet me every day. It was only when I got to the gate and he would talk to me, and I was in the trees, the hills, the nature, the outside, and that process is what connected me to being me. But I did not know how to do that when I was in a house. I did not know how to feel appreciation and love and gratitude until I was present with a horse. And the journey has been about learning how to do that just when I'm lying in bed, just waking up, and my friend kind of said to me, just open the curtains and feel gratitude. I had to consciously learn how to do that. I'd done it because I'd had horses all my life. I didn't know how to do it without. Yeah, huge journey, huge, huge, huge journey. But I don't know whether that's what you meant, but that's in principle.
No, but that's really helpful.
So there's so much. There is so much in there, but yeah.
Beautiful.
Lina, Dylan, and Valentina have their hands up too.
Did you, Valentina, or you were just clapping?
I think both of them have.
First of all, Leslie, thank you so much. That was wonderful and very profound. And sorry, wet hair out of the shower. And I think your last name is terrific, Holy Oak. It couldn't be more beautiful last name. I have had one of my chickens, Pecky, has just been very ill. And Dilly will understand. Dilly and I, our background is to analyze, to see something as being wrong, analyze it, collect information and symptoms, and try to determine the cause in order to know how to help and be of use. If you have chickens, you know that that's very difficult. Chickens get sick very mysteriously and they die very mysteriously. So with a background like mine, it's easy to feel helpless because you can't collect information per se. And so what I've gotten since these years with T-Touch is the two things. First of all, that you don't need to know, because the genius in every cell will organize the help. So by doing the circle and a quarter, you are inputting the light that is needed for the cell to accomplish its perfect mission. So you can let go of frustration and know that you are helping, giving love and giving light, and that the organism itself will organize the how to use the light in the cells. So that's been great. And then also, Linda, as she always tells us, do not look at what's wrong. See the potential for what is whole and healthy behavior. And as you see that and acknowledge that, your focus and your energy also goes toward promoting that result, as opposed to trying to analyze what is wrong. So thank you, Linda.
So
thank you, Leslie. And I do have a question, Linda.
Yeah.
You gave us a quote from Moshe Feldenkrais on Sunday about learning. And it started out, and I couldn't write the rest down. It started out, a human can learn in one experience how to do something.
Using non-habitual movements.
But
with a non-habitual movement activates new neural pathways to the brain, thereby activating more brain cells and giving us more potential for learning.
Okay.
That's what I remember him saying.
Thank you.
And it's quite interesting for all of our Feldenkrais practitioners here, because in Austria, I was quite shocked when a Feldenkrais practitioner I invited into the class one day said that Moshe's potential was the connection through the bones. And certainly, I mean, not potential, his primary interest rather was the connection through the bones. And you know, because that I got that on the second day of my course, yes, of course, the connection through the body is important. But that concept of learning, that's how I see Moshe Feldenkrais giving us that potential for learning. And I'd love to know if those of you who didn't have direct access to him had that same impression about this potential of non-habitual movements, because Catherine, I see your hand.
So I remember him very, very much talking about being skeletal. So the sense of sensing the value of having the bones support you rather than the muscles having to work all the time, that without that, one couldn't do what I also remember him saying as being really important, which is really being able to move from full activation to fully letting go. So I don't know if it was just me hearing him, but what I heard him speak about a lot was that most people were sort of in between those two states all the time. They were like half activated, half letting go, rather than being able to fully act and then fully rest. So learning also, but somehow it was those two, and then the distribution of effort through the whole body, rather than overusing one part compared to another, which, as I heard it and have experienced, is what people do, is that habits get us into using ourselves in a certain way. So then we keep on using the same parts over and over, and we don't ever discover how to distribute the movement, which is what we knew as infants, and which is why, going back to the infant part.
So I think that's really important, because I realize when you say that, of course, that's what we got, what you're just saying, throughout our whole training. And it's very possible that that statement on the second day of the course was necessary for me, because I took that statement and thought, if this is true for a human, it's got to be true for a horse. And I went out that day and I showed that in one simple exploration of seeing the body, moving the body, not seeing, moving the body in ways that the horse couldn't move itself gently, not with force, that mare, 16 years old, had to be chased to be caught after one 30-minute session exploring movements of her body, she came to the gate. And that,
so would you say again that, what the statement was that you heard?
Yeah, that it's possible for a human to learn in one experience using non-habitual movements that activate new neural pathways to the brain, thereby making more brain cells having the potential for a new learning. And that's what stuck in me, my mind, over all these years. And that when you say what you just said, of course, that wasn't what we focused on for 4 years was exactly what you're saying, the whole skeletal issues. So it's interesting that was necessary for him to say that for me to change my way of working with horses and develop a whole new concept, that the idea of repetition with horses, that horses are stupid and that they only learn through constant repetition, which is what the general, still, the concept is.
Well, it's also what people say about people.
Yes, that's true. Anyway, thank you, because that's a really important clarification. You know? And I've been thinking about that ever since, because it's certainly not what we focused on, but that's what changed my life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have Dilly still and Maggie would be after Dilly.
Thank you. And yes, go ahead, Dilly.
I just wanted to share something that was sort of really hitting home to me lately about the divine spark in each cell. I've always honoured the food that I've eaten and made, but it just occurred to me recently how the divine spark in each cell of the food that I take into my mouth is actually merging with every cell in my body. And that, to me, it may be a very simple thing, but it seemed quite profound, and how much good that food is doing, particularly if we honour it. So that was what I wanted to share, really.
Really, really important. I mean, that's why having a prayer before each meal, mm-hmm. and giving thanks in whatever your way is, certainly makes a difference with gratitude. But you're right. And when I think of that, everything that we put in our mouth, if we honor it for supporting those cells and the function of the cells, what it and ourselves, what a difference that makes. Huge, huge difference. Thank you for sharing that. It's interesting, Roland and I got in the habit of, before every meal, we say this interesting blessing that I learned in South Africa from Eugenie Chopin, and it's, it'll come to me in a minute now. I'm thinking about what Catherine said, so it'll come. Who was next?
Can I just say, Linda, that I actually made your bread yesterday as well. Your seed and nut bread, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Hold on. Sorry, who's speaking? I can't tell.
Dilly.
Dilly. Oh,
I was just going to say, I made your wonderful bread, and it is absolutely fabulous.
Thank you. I mean, that's all that I eat for bread. And it comes from my wonderful friend, Dr. Sibylle Freund. Her name in German means friend. And she's an integrative doctor. And when she graduated from medical school, she immediately enrolled in a 3-year school for medical homeopathy to prove that it didn't work. And she laughs and says, of course, it changed her life. It's so interesting. So Dilly, thank you for it. Has anyone else tried the bread? It's really, Sage, you have fantastic. It's really worth making. And it takes nothing. I make two loaves at a time and I cut it and then freeze parts of it. Maggie, you were next.
I haven't tried to say this before, and it's kind of one step back now to talking about Feldenkrais work and learning. That one of the things I felt was a little unhelpful in the way the emphasis was often on having one very clear experience from a learning process and that being enough for something to change. And I think a part of what I have experienced and I've seen in my clients is that when a habit is deeply embedded, it's not going to be just one fabulous experience that changes it. There is a need to return to these explorations and find, you know, I think one of the reasons that Feldenkrais isn't so well known is that it requires this constant, improvised, innovative approach. There aren't formulaic steps that people can take every day, and yet it does need to be engaged with, I think, every day to undo the things that we don't even realize are habitual until they start to change. We don't know there are our habits until we realize we're not doing them so much anymore. So my goal as a teacher for a long time has been to look for ways to help people engage with it enough to really undo things like the habit of irritability or the habit of feeling miserable in the morning, or, you know, there's and probably unavoidably when people talk about Feldenkrais, they emphasize the physical so much, and it's just as important to look at what's going on in the thinking, and the habitual thinking is just as significant. And I think Feldenkrais is just as powerful for that. But, you know, it's very different if you've done a training and you've engaged with every day. That's why I love coming to this, you know, on a regular basis, is it enables one to do enough of something to make a difference. That's what I love about being able to work online, is that for the first time really my entire career, some of my students are doing enough to actually begin to change, instead of just realize that it could work but never doing enough of it to actually feel the benefit. So yeah, I think we're in a new, very interesting phase for a lot of these deeper shifts. So thank you. And yeah, this is just being able to talk about Feldenkrais on this level is delight. Thank you.
And Maggie, thank you for bringing that up. And I wonder when I say that, because we know that normally it doesn't happen in one experience. And yet perhaps what I should maybe make clearer is that statement changed my life, because I took it in my hand. I went and I found a horse with a habit of not being caught. All I said to this guy who had like 60, a bunch of horses, is, do you have a horse that has a habit that I could just, you know, explore? And this was this older mare that had to be chased around in the pasture to be brought into the stall to be fed. She'd never been ridden. It's not like she was coming to do something she didn't like. I mean, talk about habits. And so, I mean, I think, so anyway, the fact that working with her one time and she came to the gate, and that is what we find with our animals, that we can often make these changes. And I think you're so right with humans, but you see, I think one of the problems that people don't come back to the Feldenkrais is that we made a big mistake. And I was in the original first meeting after our first graduation, where we had a choice of doing what the Rolfing people did with Ida Rolf. And that is, you buy 10 lessons. You can't just come for a lesson, because what happens, people come for a Feldenkrais lesson, maybe one or two, but often they feel such a change in one session that they think, okay, I'm fixed. And they don't realize that they can change the way they live. I mean, I finished that Feldenkrais training in 1975, and Roger and I worked with Feldenkrais, specifically giving lessons, Feldenkrais lessons, until 83. Well, he and I were split after that, and thank God, if any of you know it, I mean, he's one of my dearest friends. You know, I believe that we can have an 8-year relationship and be really partners and split and honor that person for what we had at the time, which is amazing. So anyway, I wanted to say to that is I have to be careful when I put that out as that anybody can change in one experience, because we know it's not true. And maybe it's much more true. Maybe it's truer for animals than people.
I think that might be possible, that animals wouldn't necessarily have quite such a deeply embedded habit simply because of the lack of constantly going over things in our heads the way humans so often do. Well, re-embedding something once we've eased it or shifted it, we just go back to thinking that way again. All too easily should we find ourselves in the wrong kind of with the wrong kind of influence or environment. You mentioned the word environment, it's very important there. But I also know that we can change, and I also know people can have spectacular shifts. I think when you have that spectacular shift, that's what people think of as a healing or a miracle.
Right. So one of the things that affects whether an animal learns in one experience or not is if the person working with that animal, just what Valentina said, holds the vision of how you would like them to be, the ideal state, rather than focusing on what they don't see. And it is human to focus on the negative side. And one of the things I want to share with you, the reason that I know that that is absolutely true and to be forgiven in ourselves, is one of the past life regressions I did with Chris Griscom at the Light Institute in the 80s. And I did many, many regressions. And one of them, I saw in my body, going into the body, that every cell, besides having that divine spark, which I didn't see at that time, every cell in the body is holding every emotion, every negative emotion of every person that ever lived on this planet. Every fear, hatred, all of this jealousy, all this stuff. And it's our opportunity as we awaken to say, oh, that jealousy, that, wow. Going back to Jerry Jampolsky, has to do with love or fear? What's my choice? And do I choose love or fear? Do I choose to see this, here we are, this glass? No? It's half full. That's how I've practiced. And then you have to practice over and over and over because it's half empty. Oh my gosh, what's going to happen when it's all gone? And that is a practice over and over. What's my choice? And this simple, what we call a philosophy, they're really the keys to success in the Tellington method. This concept that if we want to change our animals or ourselves, we have to focus on what we want to see of behavior, relationship, performance, or well-being. What is the ideal possibility? Or do we focus on what is? And that's what we do over and over with ourselves, unless we say, oh, look, I'm doing that. And I can, this is where Ho'oponopono comes, I can understand this and I can forgive myself. And if I can't forgive myself, if I can't love myself for that yet, I just can't find that yet, I can switch and I can love this miraculous divine spark, this genius in every cell in my body, which is scientifically proven. Because the people who keep going back to that negative, man, we believe the science. And that's okay. Because that's our religion. And when I say our, that's what we believe in. And it's all okay. And we can say, I have the opportunity to change this. And this amazing thing, this concept, this we came up, you know, if you change your mind, if you want to change your animal, That's basic quantum science. It's just basic. When we came up with that, I didn't know about quantum science yet. It's what we focus on is what we get. What do we want to focus on? What do we want to get? So Maggie, thank you so much for bringing that up. Yes, it's, who is it?
Catherine.
Catherine, yes, go ahead.
So I'm trying to see how to say this in a coherent way. So I really appreciate what Maggie's been bringing in and brought out in what you're saying. I find that really important in my experience. Now, I have not worked with animals. I've worked with people, and I've worked with all different people for a long time. For those who don't know, I studied with Moshe back in Amherst. And I think, what is it that makes it possible for these major transformations that occur sometimes, but not all the time, for people is really, really an important question, because I have worked with people where I was able to help them really change their way of being. And with others, it hasn't. And then I studied with Anat Bonniel a great deal. And I mention her not to bring up any controversy, but because one of the most fascinating things that I saw her doing when I was doing a supervision series was working with a boy who was about 10 years old, and she was working on how he functioned in math. So this goes to what you're saying, Maggie, and asking about. She was working with how he thought and learned, and her capacity to work with movements, helping him move in his body and play with, I think it was toy soldiers, in a way that showed her what he understood and what he didn't understand. And nobody of his it was clear from what he was studying in school that his teachers didn't realize what he got and what he didn't get, because he could pretend well enough that they thought he understood things that he didn't understand. And I think we move through life that way, by the way. I think that's an analogy for how we move through life. But his father stopped the learning process. And I think this is, I don't know if this happens with people with their animals, but it does with parents with children, when they don't see enough change. So if the parents haven't been sensitive to the subtleties, because it's not necessarily a big thing like she comes to the gate or runs away. Somehow it's subtler than that with people. And we are trained to see this is a change, this is a change, and to notice that. But sometimes those changes, I think, are very subtle. And I guess for me, trying to work with myself, then coming to myself, the difficulty I've had, and I've been both wanting to be here because I wanted to experience you where you are right now, Linda, and always like loved knowing you, you know, since all this time, but didn't want to work with animals particularly. But I don't actually experience everything that people are saying they experience about the heart hug. I don't experience it. So I don't want to fool myself and say I do, and I keep trying, and I'll smile a little. I've done lots of practice, and you can see White Tara back there, and that's Guru Rinpoche. So a lot of their similar thinking about how to manifest wholeness in life through Vajrayana Buddhism with what you're saying. So it's not that I reject focusing on creating all that's possible in the moment, but I don't experience it with a heart hug, and I also don't really get this thing about that you keep saying is completely proven by science, that every cell has this genius. So I am, you know, I've sat here for weeks and months, and I've been reading that book that I have the book by the woman who went from being a professor to coaching, but I still don't get it. And so I want to acknowledge, I couldn't see how to say something and not be trying to put it. I'm not trying to put it down, or I'm just telling you.
No.
Experiencing it. It's like I'm not.
But it's really important to say that. It's really important. And the thing is with this book, so you have read this particular, she has another one, but you.
Yes, I have that. And I've read at least, oh, I don't know, well over half of it, maybe 2/3 of it.
Put that in the fridge and I'll do the coffee. Sorry. Okay, so it's interesting. So let's just think. You see, the thing is where, first of all, I have to ask you, when you do the Hartog, have you done it when you've had, like, do you ever have looping thoughts that you can't stop?
Not so much.
Not. So do you ever, I think where the Hartog has been so effective for people, where Eleanor just found it like unbelievable, was when people were really fearful or really agitated, really stressed, really feeling like out of themselves, not in the body. And that's how I would say it. And ungrounded, another way I would say it, from the animals. And they found that by doing this 1 1/4 circles, that, and when we found, didn't do this in the beginning, the smile to activate the serotonin, took me years to figure that one out because it really makes a difference. And it also was, we discovered, do any of you remember in the last class, and I can't remember her name, that the healthcare provider who worked in the hospital in London, and she had amazing success with working with people who, like this, maybe some of you remember this one boy, 6-year-old, who wasn't communicating with his parents. They were really upset. He hadn't defecated for about 5 or 6 days, refused to go to the toilet himself, even though he could walk. He was in bed, but refused to get out of bed. And she had just done the Hartog herself with the family, invited them to do it and invited them to follow. And this boy got up and went to the bathroom and defecated. Now, what she said, coming back a couple of weeks later, is that it hadn't worked for her one time with one of the people she was working in the hospital. It hadn't worked for her to reduce her stress. And what she realized, she had forgotten to take the clock off the wall. Now, the reason this is important and what's behind this work, we recognize, is the fact that I believe that's what's behind the work, and it's work that I haven't brought into yet, and that is the 3 studies that we did with Anna Wise, who was the director of the Boulder Institute of Biofeedback. And I just keep forgetting to go and pull that information up and put it out for you all, because Anna Wise, I'll just remind you, because this is really important to you, I think, maybe understanding at another level. Anna Wise watched me work on a horse at a big demo I was giving in Santa Fe, and came up to me after and said, you know, I think you're working in the awakened mind state. You can look up Maxwell Cade. He's the person who wrote the book, The Awakened Mind, and did the original research. And she worked with him in the UK for 11 years. And then came to the US and started the Boulder Institute of Biofeedback. And what Maxwell Cade had found by measuring countless yogis and people who functioned in what he considered an ideal state, is that they had an activation in both hemispheres, logical and the left and right hemispheres. And you see it, it's a specific pattern called an awakened mind with a, like if you have a computer screen here, you have a specific beta brainwaves in both hemispheres. That's normally thought to be a left hemisphere thing. Full alpha, lot of theta, and theta is generally thought to be a right brain thing, not a left brain. And then delta, again, thought to be in the deep subconscious, the state. And what, so she wanted to measure me. And when I was moving the skin in this, now we realize it's a spiral, that I was indeed in this state of activation of what's called the awakened mind. And so then she wanted to measure my students. And so we put 15 students together that first year in Boulder, Colorado at a horse training. And she measured people being T-touched and applying T-touch. And there was much indication in that direction. And then what she wrote about is, oh God, what's the name of her book? On page 211, she writes The High Performance Mind. She writes about the work we did with the horse, showing that when we were working on the body, that you got an activation in both hemispheres. Now, that what was really interesting at one point, and we have this on video, is that she said, oh, look at this. This is all this alpha on the left side. This would be really interesting if it was also on the right. And in that moment when she said it, the screen changed. Now, that can be explained in the book, The Intention Experiment by Lynn McTaggart, because what we think now, it's known that what we think has such an influence on what happens, including in all of research. So this is a question is, you know, how meaningful actually are these research projects when a person has a certain direction they're going in. So anyway, this clock on the wall is really important. And I am, so do you imagine the numbers when you do it?
Not necessarily.
Without,
I'm so used to the clock, you know, I'm so used to doing all of that, that I sometimes do and sometimes don't.
Well, the thing is, what Maggie said, it didn't work for her when she didn't imagine the clock. And that's okay. Why I very specifically say, put the 6 toward the ground, put the 9 toward the right shoulder. I'm activating this method because it's known that the left brain is responsible for methods, and anything with numbers activates the logical left brain. And the fact that we imagine that clock, when we imagine it, that activates that right brain. And I, you know, it said that you have to hear something or do something, actually it's do something like 21 times in order for it to settle in, but it's actually, sorry about the noise behind, God, they're putting in a new deck next door. Come on, guys. So I am going to say this over and over, because when you really know what I'm talking about, that when you imagine that clock and you put it there, that activates the right brain. Now also, when you move the tissue, movement, just any movement of the hands or any movement of our bodies also activates the right brain. And you really want to know, the basis of this work is understanding what that right brain is responsible for, feeling. This concept of the feeling deficit syndrome, now it's known, people aren't feeling anymore because we shut down our feelings, of course. And just the fact that you're feeling that, feel that, and the fact that it activates right brain, imagining, anything to do with imagining, activates, and this movement that I'm doing, and by the way, this is something I did when I first learned about this in 1972, being studied by Stanford research, Russell Tark at Esalen, I got this idea. I practiced for, I don't know, it seems like months, this concept of just making the infinity sign And then imagining writing my letters, my name backwards with my left hand in the air, the movement, all anything has to do with movement activates our right brain. Dancing, music, of course, color, all of that is right brain stuff. Activation. Now remember, feeling, responsibility of the right brain, creativity. We've all become more creative, right? Through COVID. Now, compassion. Compassion is definitely a right brain concept. And people who are really methodical and left brain tend not to be a little short on the caring about others or even themselves or animals or nature or the universe. And the fourth thing I want this to really understand, because this is the core of this work, and it's not out there in our animal work, because we've really kept this kind of simple, because there are so many people who come to us, they just want their dog to stop barking. They just want the dog to stop pulling on the leash. And any of this other stuff, forget it. Some of the people who come to Feldenkrais just want not to have that pain anymore, be able to move. And the fact that, you know, Feldenkrais people are, you know what their potential could be. Oh my God, if they'd only come back 10 times, would change their lives. But so anyway, that's three. What's the fourth one? What is the fourth responsibility of the right brain? Intuition. And that intuition, this concept of Judy G. Well, first of all, the first thing that I got from the Rosicrucian teachings was unlearned knowledge. Oh, ha, that's everything in the quantum field. Of course, that is our just connecting in and listening for that unlearned knowledge, that pulling that out of the quantum field. It's also, no, this Judy G, this lovely statement that is part of our training, and that is that intuition is the manifestation of divine consciousness within you. Hearing and understanding its messages will change your life and help you find your true path. That's what Sage Lewis did with you all, leading you through this, what is your soul purpose? And it was so much fun for me, and I see all your hands now. I'm on a roll here a moment. I really want you all to get this. And my soul purpose is you are the glowing, and I think of the glow worms coming out of the darkness into the light, the glowing mirror of infinite, the glowing mirror of possibilities, who reflects peace, peace that comes from Ho'oponopono, peace that comes from recognizing that we are indeed divine beings. So the glowing mirror of possibility, who reflects peace, love, choose love or fear, what's your choice, and light within the cells. And so finding that soul purpose, it was so useful. I've done this stuff for years, and doing that process with Sage was just so helpful for me. And so thank you for saying you don't feel it. That's really important. What can I do to acknowledge that? Because you won't be alone in that. And what can I do to help you? See, one of the things that made us realize that it worked in the beginning is we used the computer M-wave, and we measured us doing the 1 1/4 circles on our bodies. And you could see that we would go into coherence in a short time. And that coherence is what we're looking for. When we're in a state of the control of the amygdala, of the primitive part of the brain, which is necessary for fear, you know, all that fight, flight, freeze, faint, fool around. That's the responsibility of that reptilian part of our brain. and we shift it because we could do it measure. We measured, did a lot of measurements showing you activate the forebrain. And in the process, you would come into heart coherence. And coherence, that's why we do this heart hack, so that we can learn. Because when you're in the state of coherence, that's the ideal state for learning and for being. So I really thank you for saying
so,
that.
So I say this with complete like humility, okay? Not
it,
like saying there's anything special.
No,
but it may be that because of the, I mean, literally hundreds, probably thousands of hours I've spent with various practices that maybe I can't see Linda because there's so many hands. How am I going to get to see Linda again? I've got to get
Just go up to, and put me on speaker.
I'm just going to, if I pin you, let me see. I have to go to gallery and pin you, and then I'll keep, there you go. I've pinned you. Now I see you. Okay, good. So I've done so much that it may be that I know other paths to be in at least some close approximation. And I often talk in approximations because of studying with Moshe, you know, and feeling that things move through approximations. So I am perhaps accessing my own approximation of what you're teaching people to find this way. And my path may be one that just works for me so well that the other doesn't feel different. So I don't notice a big difference there. Because when you guided us in the first trip into the forest, I think, I don't know, but it was quite a while ago. That was marvelous. For me, I think it's more, I almost want to say the pixie quality of imagination. And the deity forms from Buddhism. And I studied a lot with Jean Houston too. And it was through Jean that I met Moshe. And so all of that speaks to me very directly. So it may be that I just am in some sense somebody who, for whatever reason, it's not the most direct path, whereas for other people it is.
Well, and let me give you this, Catherine, that I would like to say for all of you. The reason it's useful to understand and know it, because you can give it to clients who are really in a state of agitation and they don't have your background to have emotional balance, because you learn through Buddhism emotional balance. We don't react. And that is a state of reaction when you are stressed. And that's what we can shift.
We actually do react. We don't bullshit ourselves. We react, but we're aware that we're reacting. And we have compassion, hopefully. But yes, we react.
That's true. You're right. I really react. But I don't act. Well, I act.
But we don't believe it. We react, but we don't believe it's important that we're reacting.
So my thing for this tea touch for all of you is to learn these simple methods that you can help yourself in the middle of the night when you have a pain and you don't want to get up and take a Tylenol or whatever, or you've done that before and it hasn't helped and you want to be able to actually disappear that pain. And that's what we have found over and over. And you have somebody who's agitated, like Eleanor did a YouTube on this, actually. It's one of the Feldenkrais practitioners had a daughter who just completely lost it and was hysterical and really, and she forced her, which I don't think we should be showing this one on a, you know, but anyway, she held her and did the heart hug and brought her back to out of her hysteria. Now, that's an extreme case, but Eleanor and many, many healthcare providers have found that this is the heart hug, something they can give to their people, even over the phone, and help them come to a place of peace in a matter of moments when you bring all those elements in. So, but thank you very much, because, you know, all these other things, you've come to it, you don't need it. but you might find it useful at some point to help a client.
Linda, this is Sage. Could I jump in quick with a comment?
Yes, and then we're going to then we're going to open it to. Oh, and then we've got to take a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back and we'll start taking the hands as they because.
Yeah, this is a really quick comment based on Catherine, what you were talking about. I have to tell you that when I first began this work, the T-Touch work 20 years ago, and the heart hug was, I would say, fairly new, I wasn't feeling anything. Nothing was happening. So I thought it was a bunch of baloney. And the more that I have done the heart hug, the more I have over the last 20 years, and the more that I have taught this and adapted it into different ways of placing the hands on my heart, I start to feel more. I also practice and study Buddhism. So I understand what you're talking about. And my encouragement is to keep doing the work, because you will find that things start to shift just from spending more time doing the heart hug. The end.
It's Thank one you of my, so much.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite touches. I mean, we use it every day at our home. So it's, I absolutely love it. And at the beginning, I wasn't a fan. So,
yeah. So thank you. And so I'm going, it's 6 minutes after. We're going to start at, what is that? Give me 10 minutes, 16 after. We'll come back. I'll stop the recording.